You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast, the number one source for hunting and fishing information, strategy and tactics, as well as conversations surrounding conservation efforts and other outdoor activities in the great state of Iowa. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Iowa Sportsman Podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. My name's Dan Johnson. I'm your host, and we have a really awesome podcast today. But before we get into all that, I want to take this moment and do a little housekeeping, right? The first thing I want you to do is make sure that you go to the Iowa Sportsman Facebook page and follow along, because there's a lot of cool things that happen on that Facebook page. Second, I want all of you to go to the Iowa Sportsman website, iowasportsman.com. And there is even more great content on the website, right? They have a lot of articles that come through that platform in addition to their magazine, which is the third thing that I want to talk about. And that's, if you're interested, you need to subscribe to that magazine, because there's even more great content on the magazine side of things as well. So you got the podcast, you got the website, and you got the magazine, which is the trifecta. If you are an Iowan and you love the outdoors, everything that you need is on one of those three platforms, right? So hunting, fishing, waterfowl, deer, turkey, we cover it all in all those platforms. So be sure to follow along on social media, subscribe to the magazine, follow the blog on the website, and I think that at that point you'll have your bases covered. So now on today's podcast, we're going to be talking with returning guest Noel Gandy. Now, Noel had some ups and downs this past season, right? He had an encounter with an absolute giant deer. He wasn't able to connect on it. There was some things that he wished he would have done different. And I think as bow hunters, and bow hunters specifically deer hunters, we all can look back at a season and say, man, I wish I would have done one thing different, because that one thing may have changed the game big enough to where instead of talking about the deer you missed, you're sharing the story of the deer that's on your wall. So that's what this podcast is about today. Basically do-overs. If you could go back and change time, knowing what you knew now, what would you do different? And I have that conversation with Noel today. So enough talking. Let's get in today's podcast. Mr. Noel Gandy, how you doing, man?
Hey, Dan. It's good to hear from you, buddy.
Yeah, you too. You too, man. When did we talk the first time? It's been a while.
Yeah, I was thinking back to it. You and I were talking about deer season opening up like within a day or two from when we talked. So into September, I suppose, very first of October.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And it's kind of funny because that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to chit chat about how your season went. And the title of this podcast, I'm not sure what it's going to be right now, but it's going to be something like do-overs or mulligans or whatever, because it sounds to me like your season didn't go how you envisioned it to go. Is that an accurate statement?
That is probably the nail on the head. Do-overs. There are a couple of things that I would have done a little differently having I had the information I've got now. So
yeah,
that's pretty good.
And I'm going to say this. I'm not going to even say it's a bold statement, because I know a lot of guys who wish they had do-overs, man. You know, it's like, I was having a conversation with one of my buddies the other day, and I said, man, just imagine what my wall or our walls would look like if we were an inch lower, or, you know, 10 yards closer to this trail. You know what I mean? Like, I would have like four booners, one over 200, you know, not to brag, but I don't, right? It's like, I've had the close calls, I've had the encounters or the bad shots, and, sometimes it works out in your favor and sometimes it doesn't, right?
You said a mouthful. Gosh, just the deer that I have hit, yeah, with archery equipment, an inch here or there, you know, hit and got away, or either just shot right over their back. I'm like you, man. I know two booners and a couple of really solid Pope and Young deer.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. that's what keeps you up at night, though. That's what I dream about it and everything else, man. What should I have done differently?
Right. I often find myself, when I have a spare second throughout the day, going back to trail camera pictures, maybe like 5 to 10 years ago, and just flipping through, yep, some of those older trail camera pictures and just being like, man, I wish I had that deer on my wall, but I screwed up, or he busted me, or, you know, one reason or another. So, remind everybody what part of the state you live in and what do you do for a living?
Sure. I'm in southwestern Iowa, actually in Shenandoah, so about as far southwest as you can go, just about it. And I'm a church planter. My family and I moved to Iowa from Mississippi in partnership with the Baptist Convention of Iowa, and we started a new church down here in Shenandoah. So been here, I think April will be 3 years, man. It's flown by. I still feel very new, but yeah. But gosh, it's almost been 3 years now.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So this winter, right? Horrible. Like, I'm ready for it to be over. What's the snow situation down in southwest Iowa?
So we topped 50 inches this week for the season.
Okay.
And I think what I've read is that it's on record, kind of comparable to something that happened maybe in the 60s. So, man, being a Mississippi dude, I was just in pain thinking that this is how it's always going to be.
Right.
So I was happy to hear that this is like a 50-year record or 60-year record of snowfall. But, yeah, we actually got snow last night, 2 or 3 inches,
man.
And it just never ends. It, yeah, never ends, it seems like.
Yeah. Shed rally's coming up this weekend, and, man, I don't know. It's supposed to snow tonight, right? Snowing out where you're at right now. So it's actually snowing tonight where I live. And then it's supposed to turn to rain on Saturday during the actual shed rally. And so it's going to be like snow, sleet and ice and rain. And I don't know about you, but I don't like shed hunting unless the temperature, like at least the sun's shining or the temperatures are warm. And I'm not going to get any of those things this weekend.
Well, and just the fact of the actual snow being down, I know, you know, I've seen some, maybe I even following you saw some bare ground here and there. Dude, we just don't have any.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't find sheds, but
yeah,
one thing that's good about that, though, and I'm sure you'll agree, is that right now trails are really, really defined.
Yep.
And even if you can't find the sheds, you can kind of mentally mark where those trails are. We still have a bunch of crops standing too.
Yeah.
So I mean, lots and lots of beans and corn are still standing. And man, it looks like highways around those fields right now, just as I'm driving by. And also, we're in the throes of putting together a list of farmers' names to call.
Yeah.
to see if we can go help save some tractor tires.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into this year, right? And I feel like everybody I talk to, no one really says they've had an okay year or a middle of ground year. Everybody I talk to, you know, if they don't kill a deer, it's the worst year ever. Or if they do kill a deer, it's the greatest year they've ever had, right? Like, for some reason, no one kind of says, hey, man, I had a really good, I had an okay year, I had a decent year. It's either, oh, man, it was an awesome year, or, it's horrible, it sucked. And so this year for me, I killed my biggest buck ever with archery equipment. And so I'm one of those guys right now. It's like, oh, I had the greatest year ever. You know, I was riding cloud nine or whatever. And you, on the other hand, sounds like, man, things just didn't go your way.
Yeah. As I sit here and I reflect on it, I started just kind of jotting down some notes as I was going over what you and I were going to be talking about. And then as I looked back over it, I thought, you know, maybe my year wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
The crappy part of it was my fault.
Yeah.
And like I missed a really good deer with my bow this year. And listen, I practice all the time. That's what kills me.
Yeah.
I am a super target archer right now. And but man, if I'd have been 2 inches lower, like you and I are talking earlier, then this would have been the best year I've ever had.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because on October 11th, man, I had the first cool snap. I had it all planned out. Had been watching the deer, knew what was happening, knew where to be. He came out like reading a script, and I zipped it right over his back. Not once.
Ooh.
Not once. But twice.
So he stuck around. He stuck around to give you another shot.
The first shot hit a small limb, which I mean, whether that was enough to divert it or not, that's what I'm blaming it on.
Yeah.
And he came out on the opposite. I said all that. He did come out on the opposite side of the tree. I was expecting mine, but. And then the second shot, he didn't know what happened. He jumped out into a standing bean field, and it was 45 yards or so. And I was kind of guessing, and, you know, nerves had taken over and everything else. And I just really, really rushed the shot. So,
yeah.
And then he stood out in the bean field and looked at me for about 20 minutes after that. So I got to watch him. Great video of him right now.
Boy, that sucks, man. So let me ask you this. You know, preparing for a season, you know, like there's guys who go out and they trim shooting lanes, or they, you know, they do a lot of prep work, you know, whether that's food plots or, you know, trimming tree stands out, or, you know, doing scouting or whatever. If you were to look back at everything before the shot even happened, what would you have done differently to prepare for that moment?
Well, there is one branch of a tree that I would get out of the way at this point that had a twig on it hanging down. Honestly, you know what? I had checked that spot so much. It was kind of a perfect storm deal. There's nothing much that I would do differently there. For my little boy, if I've not mentioned him, he, in September, during the youth season, got his first buck. And we had it all set up for the deer to come out in front of us, and it was going to just be perfect, kind of a slam dunk early season bachelor group deal. They were all coming, and this is going to be his first deer to even attempt a shot at, and it came out in a weird spot too that I wasn't prepared for, and I had not trimmed up and cleaned up and all. I taking that account, and then the account where I overly prepared maybe for the shot opportunity at this buck that I shot at. Boy, I learned real quick, you need to kind of be aware that they could come out anywhere and not just where you expecting them to. And I've been watching this deer come out, not that deer, excuse me. This buck I shot was a deer I'd not seen, but I've been watching the deer come out into the same ag field. Oh gosh, 3 or 4 days. And, they all use the same trail. So I was just banking on that. Then I'll be darned, they came out clear behind that afternoon where I was in.
Right.
So just be prepared, man. It's not a, there are no slam dunks in deer hunting.
Yeah. So if you could have done it over again, like let's say you could go back in time with the knowledge that you have right now, would you have put the tree stand in the same location? Would you have put it up the trail a little further? Would you have cut out different shooting lanes? What would you have done differently?
Yeah, so I was anticipating the deer coming from a timber block and going into an ag field. However, the deer, so October 11th was kind of the first really cool snap that we had. I know it rained some maybe around October 1st through the 3rd, but that, like, I went in to kill that deer. I felt like we were going to kill him that day. So kind of the prep had been done, but like I said, now having the info I have now, the trail that I walked in on is where the deer actually came in.
Okay.
And I had trimmed just enough for me to get in kind of quietly. Now, granted, scent was great. We've kind of taken care of everything there. But I think that I would have prepared a little bit more by trimming behind me and then my access in. So at least when the deer, if a deer did use that trail that I came in on, the lane would have been open for a clear shot. I could have shot the deer. He was in range for a long time. Yeah, so, but I had to wait for him to clear. And right. So, yeah, naturally you'd want to clear a couple of shooting lanes. But I'll say this. Again, it was just my nerves, no excuse. It all worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
But leaving some of that foliage really helped me because there were a lot of eyes in that field.
Gotcha.
And at that time. So there's a really, really fine line between trimming a shooting lane and then and exposing yourself too much. So I was probably 25 feet high, so plenty high, and had the tree kind of positioned. You know, to kill, a friend of mine and I went in during the midday. It was still hot. You know, we were sweating down trying to get that thing set up to kill actually a giant 8-point that I was hunting and ended up hunting him the rest of the year. But so, yeah, that deal. On that particular instance, I would have trimmed maybe just a touch more, not much. I had an instance in Kansas, though, that really, really boogered me as far as the tree stand being not situated really good for my shooting taste.
Was that this year as well?
Yeah. I ended up in Kansas for about 6 days, I guess.
Okay.
And I had a shooter 2 mornings in a row, same deer, used the same field, and just, I don't know if it's just bullheaded or what, I didn't adjust the tree stand after I saw him the first day because I thought, you know, he'll never do the same thing twice during
right.
the rut.
Right.
And I'll be darned, he did the same thing 2 mornings in a row. I took to filming this year, and so that was an added challenge. That was another thing kind of with the October deer that I shot. I was trying to get him on camera by myself, you know, I'm self-filming. But the deer in Kansas, the 2 mornings of video are identical. Like I had to go back and look at the date on the timestamp to remember which instance was which because they were identical.
Yep. Okay. That's crazy because I feel like that is a problem that a lot of guys don't adjust on. And I am 100% guilty of that specifically like in the past where, you know, you watch a deer go through an area a certain amount of time and you don't make those changes to go and get them. I've been guilty of that so much, especially, you know, like later on in the rut where maybe you were really grinding for, you know, 10, 12, 15 days hunting, you know, chasing deer. And then you just kind of get tired and you're just like, man, I don't want to have to tear down this tree stand and move it another 10 or 15 yards. And sometimes, you know, that can make the difference of, you know, a big deer on the wall.
Well, that or if my biggest thing this year, I really let the wind decide where I was going to hunt this year.
Yeah.
More so than ever. I was really trying to play that. And I just think back to, now, gosh, I've got this stand set for this wind. I don't want to change it.
Right. When you say that, you let the wind dictate you, you know, and sometimes that's good, but what do you mean? Go into a little bit more detail of that because, I'm the kind of guy who I'm real mobile. Like I try to be as mobile as humanly possible when, especially during bow season. So talk to us a little bit about, cause it sounds to me like you stayed out of certain areas on, I guess, off winds.
Right. Tried to. The farm that I primarily hunt is, I call it a, it's not where deer are living, I don't feel like.
Yeah.
Honestly. And it's just what I have permission on right now. I don't own the farm. It's a farmer's been very generous in allowing me to be there. But I feel like the deer, on one section of the farm, it's, I feel like the deer all live to the north and to the west. And then on the clear other side of the farm, I feel like they all live to the south and to the east. So if I had a strong north wind, then I would hunt the one section, you know, where the north wind was going to be blowing away from where I thought the deer were kind of going to be coming from to feed. And then, you know, vice versa on the other. If there was marginal wind, like a strong east wind or strong west wind, I had a stand set up in the center of the farm because I'm really trying to put all my eggs in the basket that these deer are going to be cruising, essentially a creek bottom that I'm hunting. And so I really tried to play it that way. I have three stands for that big of a farm, but Southwest Iowa is unique. I don't know, a lot of Iowa's this way, in that we don't have tons of blocks of timber. There's right. not just a huge amount of timber. So, you know, I was trying to find a thick ditch of grass where the deer crossing naturally, and that's kind of where I was hanging stands. So actually, stand options were not just prevalent. They're fairly limited, honestly. So you kind of find, on one spot in particular, I just found where I could get a tree stand and did that. I've not joined the saddle hunting regimen just yet. You know, I'm a dinosaur. I still hang a tree stand and do that thing, you know. So, but yeah, the wind, the reason I did that is because I had such good luck last year just with that. Using that is kind of how I chose where to go hunt. Otherwise, man, you know what? I would drive myself nuts. Say, man, I really want to go sit this stand, but what if he comes out over here?
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, I'm going to let nature tell me where to go sit today. Yeah. And you know, it worked pretty good, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's another problem that guys have. Well, bow hunters have is, I don't know about you, but I overthink things too much when I, you know, like,
yes.
It's like, all right, well, this wind is coming at this angle today, but tomorrow it's going to be here. Maybe I should go over here. Well, if I go over here, the access is wrong. Okay. Well, once I get to the stand, the wind will be good. But if the deer are coming from this direction, you know, it's just like your brain doesn't shut up and it keeps talking you out of spots that you probably should be hunting. If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've talked myself out of so many good spots throughout the years where it's almost to the point like your brain's telling you to stay home.
You know what? I have a theory for that. You want to hear it?
Yes, I do.
This is the theory. Trail cameras have totally, I think, changed the way I hunt. They have added so much to my pleasure of hunting. July the 4th. That's my every year. That's when deer season starts
yep.
for me.
Yep.
Because I'm not planting or anything like that, food plots. So July 4th, I look forward to that like a, I was going to say like a holiday. It is a holiday, but for a different holiday. All right. And so I run these trail cameras, start running all summer long just because I love deer and I love seeing where deer are and what they're doing and how they're changing. They're like our babies, right?
Right.
Because we just, I love them. I'm a deer lover as much as I am a deer hunter. And so I've run these trail cameras for 2 or 3 months. And I know that these 2 or 3 bucks, they're showing up and they live in this natural, in this area. And, I understand that. Okay. I really like that one. So I'm going to hunt him. Right. And so I get into the deer season, which we know once that velvet sheds, man, it's game on. Yeah. The deer, they're doing their thing.
Yep.
And so my biggest problem, I think, is I take info from July and August and I try to apply it as the gospel truth in October and November. When I should probably in July, August, September be using those trail camera photos as more of an inventory of what kind of potentially is, and not necessarily that's where that deer lives. You've got to hunt right there. Now, it is where he lives, don't get me wrong. But he could also be living a mile from there by 2 months later.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that makes sense to you or not. I really, like, I hunted a ghost buck this year. I really spent a lot of time hunting a deer that I had maybe 2 days worth of trail camera pictures of in August.
Yeah.
And I passed on a couple of really good deer because, you know, that 190-inch 12 point came through here 2 days in August. Right?
Hey, I'm only laughing. I'm only laughing because I've done the same exact thing.
Yep, absolutely. So trail cameras are a major blessing. Don't get me wrong. That's one of my favorite things to do. But at the same time, dude, they can be a hindrance.
Yeah.
That can be a hindrance to strategy. And you go where the deer are right then.
Yep.
You know, not where they were.
Absolutely.
Necessarily. So.
Absolutely. So, I tell you, man, I think you nailed it when you said, you know, you talked about that when the velvet comes off in September.
Yeah.
And I talk about this all the time, man. I call that the shift. Because all these, you know, like I have a farm that I'm telling you, I get every buck coming through the entire area coming to this farm during the summer months, and they hang out there. This is where they hang out. So if I was to base my optimism going into a season off of August and July trail camera pictures, man, I should be killing Boone and Crockett's every single year. Every year, right? But September hits, there's a redistribution of the deer herd, and there's only a couple that stick around. And then sometime in about November, I'd say the second or third week of November, there's another kind of shift where all the deer that went away make a cruise through the farm that I hunt. They stick around for a couple days, and then they leave. So,
yep.
You know, it's one of those things where how much time and energy do you want to put into chasing a deer that may never show up on your farm? And if he does show up, he's there for 48 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the old adage of one in the hand is better than two in the bush.
That's right.
Kind of a deal. And, man, I agree with you. That's what makes it fun. It's, turkey hunting is the same way. You see huge flocks of turkeys, and then they bust up because everybody wants their piece of the pie. And so they leave and go and sow their oats. And then they might, just like that big 12 point, he might have slipped back through. Some, I mean, no doubt he lives within a few miles, you know, of that farm.
Yep.
But no doubt he slipped back through. But I mean, dang, you can't hunt every minute of every day. Some posts might be able to. I can't.
Yeah, I wish I could,
so
man.
You do what you can. And, yeah, I have developed a new policy this year that if it makes my heart go pitter patter, then I'm shooting him.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's the way that I look at things too, right? If it's a deer that, you know, a lot of people will sit here and tell you, hey man, you got to shoot 4-year-olds because they're mature, or you got to shoot big antlered deer. I think that's just a bunch of baloney, and more hunters need to shoot what makes them happy and not what's going to make somebody else happy. Right. So, you know, I went through this stage in my life where I was passing 150s, 160s, and I hadn't even had a 150 or a 160 on the wall yet. And
oh my,
yeah, I was like brainwashed. Something brainwashed me, right? And well, I was chasing for this 5-year period of like a 210-inch buck. I chased him for five.
That could do it.
Yeah, and he was a local deer, and he was around. He was on trail camera. I connected with him on two different occasions, one or three different occasions. One, I didn't take a shot where it was just the back half of his body. The second, he was behind a whole bunch of trees. And the third, I arrowed him and, I shot too high, and he survived the next year and got shot by the neighbor. And, in that period of time, I was making all these like great moves from a strategy standpoint, but I wasn't, you know, I should have been shooting some of these deer, because what I found out was once you have an encounter with a giant buck that you're chasing, you have no experience shooting smaller bucks, right? So your heart just goes boom, 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 boom. You go crazy. You get buck fever. And then, you know, there's that, there's that old saying that's like, act like you've been there. Well, I had never been there when this buck stepped out. So I kind of, I lost my cool, right? I was just like, oh, what do I do now? You know? And I definitely wish I could go back and take another deep breath, or maybe shoot some smaller deer throughout the years and like get acclimated. So when a big buck does show up, I was ready for it. You know what I mean?
I feel like you've been reading my diary. I mean, honestly, man, so, the exact same thing happened to me, dude, last year. Well, not this past season, but two seasons ago. And, golly, yeah, I feel like I've been reading my diary. I got so excited.
So have you shot, like, I know it's hard to say because we get excited when we see antlers, right? We get excited when we see big bucks. You know, I get excited if a doe and a fawn come through, right? I love deer. But with all that said, have you done anything to kind of prepare yourself for scenarios like that? Like, change releases. So it's a surprise release on your archery equipment, or practice high pressure shots, or like start shooting more deer, if that makes sense.
So I have. And, one of the things that I've done, and, you know what, it's, now that you're saying it and I'm saying it out loud, even after I've done all that, I get so excited.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope it never goes away, honestly.
Yeah.
I hope it never goes away.
Yeah.
Because of what happens to me, Dan, is, so this deer, we call him Lover Boy, 190 plus inches. He was one of the very first deer I got a picture of in Iowa. Yeah. I mean, it's just unreal, giant. And, I hunted him really hard all year. And then on, I'll never forget, November the 11th, 2017, he crossed a cut bean field. He was the only deer. And I grunted at him 300 yards away, and he just marched in like a Trojan all the way to me. And
man,
I don't think any amount of prep in the world watching that monster would have calmed down what I had going on.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that Valium would have calmed it down, you know. So that was just a unique experience, man. I watched him for 10 minutes kind of stomp across that field wide open. There's nothing between me and him, not a leaf between he and I. And, but so after that, I shot him really high. I mean, just really high, and, maybe another inch, I spined him and we wouldn't be having this conversation, but, it was just no man's land, and got a picture of him that year. And then this past year picked him back up, and he's still a giant.
Yeah.
But some things that I've changed, one, I didn't change releases because honestly, what I mentioned to you, my practice shooting was so good. I mean, it was really good. And that's not to say, look at me. It's just, it was really good. I felt really efficient out to 60 yards. I mean, just really good. And so I thought, well, I can't really improve my accuracy anymore. But you mentioned like the surprise release of the arrow or something like that. So what I started doing was on 20 and 30 yard practice shots, I would shoot the arrows. I'd set my bow down and I would try to jog out to grab the arrows, jog there and back, and then shoot some longer shots.
Yeah.
So just to simulate a higher heart rate.
Yep.
I did that quite a bit during the summer trying to, it's not nerves and it's not adrenaline. It's purely your heart rate getting up, but at least it's, you're breathing a little heavier and you're having to rely on calming yourself down to shoot. So that was one thing that I did in particular. And, it's helped a little bit. Killed a couple of does this year, and, I was excited to see them, but at the same time made really good shots. You know, it wasn't a big deal. And so that's another thing. And you mentioned that, and I appreciated that. we're in a position here in Iowa where some places can stand some doe control. Some places are still trying the herd's trying to recover from years back. I'm afraid maybe after this harsh winter, we might have a little setback too. But but if you can take an opportunity to shoot some deer, there's nothing better than live simulation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so a deer moves. Did you know that? A target usually stands still, but a deer will move.
Right.
So there's nothing better than practicing on the real thing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Hey, when you shoot your deer, do you try to stop them? Like with a bap or something like that?
I kind of let the scenario dictate what's going to happen. I don't have a set in stone thing. So the deer that I shot on October the 11th, he I didn't have to stop him. He was in a really good spot. He was feeding and he was calm. Everything was good about the situation. So I was trying to be as quiet and stealthy as possible because about 15 or 20 deer out in the field at that time.
Right.
The what I was telling you earlier, the previous year where I shot Loverboy, he had stomped all the way across that field. And like I said, I grunted at him, and it was a wide open field. He gets 42 yards, and he did not see anything. He didn't see a buck.
Yeah.
You know, he that's what he was coming to challenge.
Right.
And so he cut in. He was beginning to cut into some timber. I couldn't shoot him where he stopped because he was facing me. But when he started to cut into some timber, he was kind of getting out of there because he realized, you know, the deer was gone. So I did. I stopped him, running to stop him. Calm day, clear day, quiet day. He was on pins and needles at 42 yards. And I tried to aim at his heart, but he still, big deer don't get big and old deer don't get old on accident.
That's
and
right.
So he was getting out of there pretty quick. So I did at him, but, I couldn't have shot him walking
right
that far. You know, if he was 20 yards, might've been a different story, but he was 42 yards maybe. And, I don't know, man. It's just a unique and different situation.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about things that you could have done before the shot. Now you zip two over his back, right?
Yeah, I remember I said that.
not to pull the Band-Aid off, but we've talked a little bit about, you know, like pressure and moment of truth. If you could go back, other than aim lower, is there anything that you would have done different at the moment of truth or during the shot process?
Yeah, you might not like this answer, but for this one in particular, there's absolutely something I would have done differently. I mentioned to you that I was self-filming the hunt, and I dedicated myself this year. Like I am filming all my hunting, and I put the camera arm on one side of the tree, and the deer came out on the other side of it. And I spent more time messing around with that camera arm, trying to get the video camera on him. And, I firmly feel like that cost me, some nerves, like being able to compose myself because I had a whole new set of nerves that I didn't know existed. You know, I've never done that before. And, maybe I should have been doe hunting, like you said before, to get used to actually shooting deer with this new equipment. Just, it could be anything. Say you get a new bow, or say you get a new release. That's a big deal. Or a rifle, whatever. I was not used to the equipment that I was using at the time. And by the time the moment of truth came for me to shoot the deer, I was so worked up from trying to get him in frame and everything else that I just, all right, here it goes. I got him in the camera. Let's shoot him.
Yeah.
And I mean, that I would have changed a lot about that. In fact, I did. Immediately after I shot the deer, the next day I called a good friend of mine down in Oklahoma who sells a camera arm that's a little more fit for self-filming, and I had a new camera arm all the way.
Yeah.
That's more conducive for self-filming. So, some might would hear that and say, oh, that's stupid. Why are you worried about that? But I mean, that's something I really wanted to do. I enjoy. Nobody ever believes me when I say what I see or do in the deer woods. They think I'm making everything up.
Yeah.
I never am. You know, that's the unique thing about hunting.
Yeah.
You get to be out with creation, and you get to see it as it's intended to be a lot of times.
Yeah. Especially your buddies from Mississippi, right?
Yeah, they don't believe me, man. Okay, so how about this? I shoot this deer that we got. I've got 8-10 deer, 15 deer out in front of me in this thing field. I shoot him missing. He runs out to heck with the camera. You know, at that point, I'm trying to kill the deer because I'm a deer hunter before I am a cameraman. And so the second one, same thing, zips over his back. He runs off. I pick up my grunt tube because they still really don't know what's happening. Honestly, they ran off another 100 yards and stopped and were looking around. I picked up a grunt tube. I'm not really trying to call the deer back in. I'm trying not to screw up my tree stand set for the rest of the year because he wasn't the deer I was hunting. The deer was a brand new deer. I've been running trail cameras for 3 years, months. Haven't seen him a bit.
Yeah.
And so this is a new deer. I don't want to screw up the set because I still feel like I can kill this 155-inch 8-point that I'm hunting. All right. So I grunt. And as I am grunting, 200 yards to my east, maybe 250 yards, a 10-point, 150-plus-inch 10-point walks out that I've never seen into the beans. And he's looking all up at me trying to see what's going on. So, man, I tell you what, it's just you can never tell what's going to happen in the deer woods. And so I've got that 155-inch 10-point, 160-inch 10 or 12-point, the deer that I shot, three or four other little bucks, 15 does out in this field, all on camera. Nobody would have believed me had I not. So, it's been valuable to me this year for sure.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, man, I ended up I don't even know what year this was, 2013 maybe? Yeah, it might have been 2013. I had an encounter, and I was still bringing a camera and a camera arm into the tree with me, and this buck I had never seen before shows up, and that was the first encounter I had with this particular buck after like a three or four, which was going to be like a 3 years, 4 years worth of history of this particular buck. But this was the first time I ever saw him. And I let him walk through one of my shooting lanes just so I could try to get him on camera. And then I took a bad shot. I hit the deer. And for me, that was the moment in my life where I'm just like, man, is this filming stuff really worth it? Like I could have dropped this deer at 12 yards, complete broadside. You know, he was walking at a snail's pace coming through.
Right.
But instead I was screwing around with a camera, and I don't know, it is what it is. So that moment told me, man, just like put the camera down a little bit. This is me, right? I'm not saying everybody else, because I tell you what, I have 8 years, maybe 9 years worth of footage saved on my computer. That's awesome to go back and look at and, you know, share that information and those stories with my kids or my friends. But, man. So let me ask you this. Now that all this kind of craziness has happened, you weren't able to connect on the deer that you really wanted to connect on this year because of a whole bunch of different reasons, right? What are you doing, let's say starting now, or, you know, to prepare for the 2019 archery season to even stack the odds, you know, greater in your favor?
That's wonderful. I've been thinking about that already. Really. I checked with my farmer and asked him if I needed to get my tree stands out of his farm. And he said, no, if you go ahead and continue hunting that if you want to. I tried to treat him right, and he's treating me well, you know. So I've got access to the same farm, so now I can go forward next year kind of with the mentality of, okay, now I really can dedicate myself to really hunting this farm well and better. There are a couple of areas that I noticed this year that deer were constantly coming in and out of. I never saw a big buck over there, but I did see quite a few does and small bucks coming in and out of there. So I think that probably I'm going to try to get a tree stand over there at some point in time, because during the rut, the does were always there. Right. And I've got to think that during the rut, I couldn't see the entirety of it. I've got to think that some bucks were probably cruising in and out pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Because if I can see does that often, they've got to see them.
Right.
So I've got that in my plans. If we get a little bit of snow melt, I'm going to try to do some shed hunting. I don't know how fruitful shed hunting is going to be as far as just information for a farm goes, especially this year for my area, because we've had such a harsh winter and because there are so many standing crops within probably a mile and a half of the farm. I really feel like some of the deer are going to go kind of live closer to those crops, or at least be traveling back and forth to them.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to just get browse on the farm. So we'll see if we can pick them up. I'd like those there's one deer, Whop, I call him. He's a giant 8-point. I really had him on my heart this year. I'd love to pick up his sheds. And he was a homebody, you know. So kind of got that in mind. Again, just taking information that I've had this farm for 2 years now. Now, having said that, I've had 2 years of crop rotation.
Yep.
I realize now, after having this information, it's going to go back to how it was in 2017. And I feel like instead of looking, I'm going to take what I learned this year and back in 17, and I'm going to apply it to 2019.
Right.
So my east side of my farm, this year the west side of the farm was on fire, as far as that's where I got every bit of my activity. Last year, didn't see a deer on the west. This year, year before last, the east side of the farm was the hot side. And so I really feel like I'm going to probably put some more effort on that east side this year. And see if I can't come up with maybe another tree stand location or two. And one thing about the snow is, I said it's going to be tougher for shed hunting, but at the same time, you and I discussed earlier, there are going to be some really defined trails and things like that within the timber. And so I'm going to use that right now to go and try to figure out where I can be hanging a tree stand. And I'll probably hang some tree stands during turkey season, honestly. Right. I might not do them right now. I'd like there to be a little greenery, so I'll know a little bit better how to trim. I don't want to trim too much, but at the same time, I'd like to go ahead and do as much of that as I can as far as hanging tree stands, but use this time in the spring of the year to get new sets established from MRI, the most recent information,
right,
to get some stuff trimmed up. So that's what we're going to be doing. Probably put in some mineral as well, and maybe some added food, because that's something I can't get to the farm right now because of snow. I mean, it would just be such a long haul for me to walk. I couldn't take enough to sustain anything right now. But as soon as we get some access, I think I'm going to take maybe some alfalfa bales or something like that to try to help the deer recover from what's been a difficult winter.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. And that's good strides to, you know, at least you're not stagnant, right? At least you're not sitting there just shooting your bow. You know, you're actively working on strategy throughout the whole year. And I think when a guy does that, you know, I try to do the same thing. When a guy does that, it just gets him that much closer to not only learning his property, but learning how the deer use that property. So
right,
it's a win. and hopefully it works out better, right? You know, you don't shoot over, you don't shoot over their back. You can say, well, I've been there before, right? All these things that, you know, all the mistakes you made in the past, you can flip those, and now this year you're back to, you know, getting that 190 on the ground, man. That would be awesome.
Oh man, I just feel really good about this coming year. I say that every year, though. I mean, dude, listen, we live in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that I've hunted several other states. I have not found one that I enjoy more than hunting in Iowa.
Yeah.
And so I'm optimistic every time I go to the tree stand. And so I don't know, man. I enjoy it so much. Let me say this. I did get to bring the equalizer out during late season. Even though it was extremely warm, like I wish we could have flipped November and December weather-wise.
Right.
But you know, it was what it was. But I did lay a pretty good buck down during the late season with the muzzleloader, so that felt pretty good. I've not shot a gun in a long time, but after I got my butt kicked all during bow season, I thought, to heck with it, I'm bringing the CVA out. We hammered one, so it was fun. It was very. Very fulfilling, I'll say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, man, I really appreciate you hopping on and chatting with us today. I'm excited for you as far as, you know, this upcoming season. Turkey season's just around the corner. If the snow ever melts and the temperature ever goes down, we might be able to, you know, do some turkey hunting. But I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dan. I always enjoy talking to you, buddy.
And that brings us to the close of another podcast. Huge shout out to Noel. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to hop on the podcast. Huge shout out to all of you for listening to the podcast. Please be sure to subscribe if you're not subscribed already. And if you know an Iowan that might benefit, or heck, anybody who might benefit from this podcast, please share the information, show them how to subscribe, get educated on how to download this podcast, and just continue to consume some really good content. So thank you guys again for listening, and not much to say in the closing except we'll talk to you next week.